All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and I got a question. Are you ready for some degeneracy? Because it's Grim's Hentai Corner, and we're back with Dead and Aegis. And hopefully we'll see some magical girls get torn apart, as I've been told that happens. No one else has come to the room yet. It seems she's the first to arrive. Minori's small trunk sits next to another small trunk, as well as a third bizarrely large trunk. The room's only furnishings are a set of lockers, a triple bunk bed, and a small shower in an adjoining room. She can't help but think that having only one shower between the three of them will lead to friction down the line. In a similar vein, she can't help but feel that the room is far too small. Although it's larger than her room back at the academy, it's simply not large enough for three people. Still, she has to remember that living space is a precious luxury out here in the middle of outer space. As large as the cathedral might be, every part of it, down to the very air they're breathing, was brought in from afar. Apparently, they'll receive personal rooms after their first year of service. The veterans, Lisette included, all have their own rooms in another block. One day, Minori will also live there. Ah, and I thought I got here first. Minori's first impression of this girl is that she's cute. She's so cute, in fact, that it feels like she doesn't belong on the front lines. This girl looks more like the kind of girl who should be enjoying the best years of her life. She ought to be hanging out around town, cooking, even falling in love. Minori chides herself. No, she shouldn't be judging others by their appearances. What? Is there something on my face? Huh? No, there isn't. Sorry. Heh, I totally know what you're thinking. With a bubbly giggle, the cute Asian girl points at Minori. You're thinking I don't belong here. Everyone's been looking at me like they're trying to figure out how I snuck in. Personally, I have to agree with them. Bullseye, the indifference with which the girl speaks leaves Minori perplexed. I didn't think that... Whoa, this place is small. This isn't a room, it's a sardine can. Three people can't fit in here. The two of them turn to look at the newest arrival. She's a beauty. Her skin is so pale that Minori assumes the girl must be Russian, or otherwise from the Northern Hemisphere. Wow, she's gorgeous. The pretty girl glances at Minori and the Asian girl. It feels like there's a hint of disappointment in her eyes, but it disappears a moment later. Did Minori just imagine it? I appreciate the honest compliment. Makes sense, I guess. I really am gorgeous. She brushes back her silky, almost silvery hair before picking up her small trunk and heaving it up to the top bunk of the bed. I'm taking the top bunk. Any complaints? I want the bottom bunk, so it's fine by me. I tend to turn over in my sleep. The two of them look at Minori. I'll take the middle bunk then. Although Minori wouldn't have cared what bed she got, the way it felt like they forced her leaves her with a sour taste in her mouth. Huh? Why do I get the impression I know you from somewhere? An impish smile plays on the beauty's lips. Guess you'll have to comb your memories for it, but you look dumb as a brick, so you probably won't remember. Wow, mean. I'll definitely totally remember where I know you from, and if I don't, she'll tell me, right? With that, she smiles and turns to Minori. Unfortunately, Minori hasn't the faintest idea who the other girl is either. The beauty's gaze moves from Minori to the other girl. I'm Ilusha Petrovna, and you two? You haven't introduced yourselves, right? Yet, right? The Asian girl seems to realize Minori hasn't given her name yet. I'm Nana Kisaragi. Minori Izuka. Your names are a pain to remember. Minori can't help but worry how things will turn out in the future. Can she really flourish here with this girl insisting on butting heads with her? Ah, maybe you two know. Is that guide lady some kind of celebrity? Everyone kept talking about her. Huh? Minori stares at the Asian girl's face. Did she really get all the way here without knowing who Cersei is? Minori's anxiety deepens. Can she get along with this girl too? It feels like they live in different worlds. Ah, you're looking at me like I'm supposed to know who she is. That's because you really are supposed to know that. She's the infamous Cersei the Dotard. You shouldn't call her a dotard. Even if she lost her powers as a special warfare trooper, she's still on the front line. She's still continuing the fight. That's impressive. She also saved Minori's life, just like Lizette. She was Lizette's first partner, or at least one of them. Thank you for the sensible comment, Miss Goody Two Shoes, but I'm getting some fishy vibes from her. Fishy vibes? I mean, how can you trust someone who tries to hype you up with this lead actress pep talk when she's only just met you all for the first time? She probably says those lines every year. Minori falls silent. She knows that some people might be insincere in that way, but hearing such accusations leveled at someone who fought together with Lizette rubs her the wrong way. She stays silent, though, fearing that speaking up would only get this girl to sneer back at her. She doesn't want to come across as a blind worshiper. But just then, the speakers on the wall crackle to life. All special warfare trooper cadets are to put on their encased wands, put on a spacesuit, and gather at the deployment port immediately. The three of them exchange gazes. I wonder what they want. Think they'll give us a trophy for getting through the first day? Of course not. What do you think, you're a tourist here? Minori isn't particularly good with social situations, so even after one round of introductions, she struggles to attach the girls' names to their faces. Butting into a conversation between two strangers is beyond her. She focuses on doing what she has to as she promptly opens the locker and opens the vinyl bag containing the spacesuit inside. However, something makes her hand stop. The logo on the bag, it belongs to a company affiliated with a major conglomerate. That conglomerate is owned by Mitsumi's family. She shakes her head and pulls herself together before handing the other two their spacesuits. Maybe it's a briefing? The big shots do love their speeches. Well, no point wasting our time thinking about it. We're soldiers now, so we have to follow orders one way or another. The Russian girl accepts the bag from Minori and casually tears it open. Tearing the wrapping off new clothes is always exciting. You think this is a magical girl costume? The Asian girl chatters cheerfully as she carefully tears the wrapping open. They all take their spacesuits out of their bags and hold them up to the light, but the three suits are entirely identical. Minori can tell just from a glance that the spacesuit is minimally equipped. The fabric feels thinner than she expected, to the point where it all feels outright cheap. Wow, it's like from a sci-fi movie. Don't you watch documentaries? This doesn't count as sci-fi these days. Say, how are you supposed to put it on? Say, Big Shot Officer, doesn't it come with any underwear? Minori checks the locker again, but the only things inside are three helmets and backpacks. Even those articles seem extremely small and simple. The backpacks are alarmingly basic, with oxygen tanks for breathing and monodirectional thrusters, nothing else. The helmets don't even seem to have any communication devices built into them. Everything seems painfully disposable, and it doesn't make any sense to her. She shakes her head, trying to rid herself of her anxious thoughts. No way. We have to walk around in this stiff synthetic fiber suit without any undies. It'll chafe our skin. You know, the underwear would be made from stiff synthetic fiber too. Besides, this fabric really clings to the skin. Everyone's gonna see our curves. Satoru said I'd gotten a little chubby lately, too. LOL. Then wear your usual panties under it. But then they'll see my panty lines. I think it'll be fine. They're still pressurized suits, despite the way they look. They should have a circulation system to regulate temperatures between sunlit and shaded areas. It'll probably get hotter inside than you think. But even as she says this, Minori can't help but shake the sneaking suspicion that this shoddy, minimally equipped spacesuit doesn't have something essential as a circulation system. Since it lacks any features for excrement disposal, this suit doesn't look like it's meant to be worn for long periods of time. But they wouldn't go so far as to omit a circulation system, would they? Besides, it's not like they're going to tell us to take off our clothes in space. Or do you get off to floating around naked in outer space or something? As she says this, the Russian girl slips off her clothes. Her body is beautiful. Her bust size isn't much different from Minori's, but she's a head taller and superior in every other category. Proud, perky breasts, and a long, well-shaped navel. Even her crotch is clean, smooth, and pretty. Of course I don't. Jeez, but what would Satoru think if he saw me like this, though? Maybe it'd get turned on. The Asian girl mumbles to herself as she takes off her own clothes. She is the same height as Minori, but her figure is far more impressive. Her breasts are large and plump, her waist and buttocks are curvy, and her delicate crotch is covered by a soft layer of pubic hair. There we are. Ah, yeah. Her body radiates a gentle but warm aura. Her body impresses in every way that Minori's doesn't. She can't help but envy her roommates' bodies. Each of them is lovely and beautiful in her own way. Even with naked, they can at least take pride in their bodies. If this were a hand-to-hand sparring session, Minori, who went through basic training at the military academy, could likely overwhelm them. That thought hardly comforts her at all right now, though. Minori squats in one corner of the room and turns her back as she takes off her clothes. When her gaze falls upon her own naked limbs, she only thinks of herself as unsightly. The room's lighting casts dark shadows over her skin and nipples. Her pubic hair seems so much dirtier and uglier than that of the other girls. It only makes Minori feel even more wretched and ugly. Ooh. Trying to hide in the corner to the best of her ability, she hastily puts on the spacesuit, leaving the encased wand hanging around her neck. She feels like a thief trying to avoid detection.
Safe!
We made it in time. I didn't think you'd get lost, Yusha. Zip it. Even I have things I'm not good at. Besides, I didn't get lost. I just don't know where this place's layout. I just don't know this place's layout yet. Although not all of the cadets have arrived yet, the deployment port is already crowded with people. Minori thinks to herself, with this many special warfare troopers, wiping out the CC should be entirely possible. When she thinks a little more about it, though, there must be this many cadets arriving every year, yet the CC remains at large. The enemy is simply that powerful. She chides herself for her naivete. She's a warrior. So long as she fights and helps the war effort, she can ultimately take pride in herself. It doesn't take much longer for the last of the cadets to arrive. We will now be holding a swimsuit. We will now be holding a spacesuit. We will now be holding a spacesuit inspection. Everyone, please put on your helmets and backpacks and check that your partners to the left and right have put their suits on properly. Behind them, the door to the deployment port locks shut with a solemn, ominous sound. Minori feels a bit let down. Managing one spacesuit is a matter of life and death for sure, but she didn't expect this to be the topic of their first assembly. It's not worth complaining about, though. Also, this might just be in preparation for some kind of ceremony all the rookies go through at this base. She's aware that a lot of organizations, military units, and sports teams included have initiation rituals. The cadets, Minori included, help each other put their backpacks and helmets on. Minori's field of vision through the visor becomes tinged with blue due to the visor's radiation-blocking coating. She checks that the girls around her have put their suits on correctly. In front of her is an African girl. To the right is her Asian roommate. To her left is a Caucasian girl. Behind her is a Yusha. None of their suits have any problems. Now then, we will now open the deployment port's airlock. The airlock that forms the ceiling of the deployment port begins to unlock. Once the mechanical sounds cease, their ears are filled by the sound of the air rapidly draining from the room. Minori operates the control box on her suit's chest piece to open the valve for her air pump when... It happens so suddenly. A foul odor hits her nose, clouding her mind with an odd sense of fatigue. She immediately tries to close the air valve again, but it seems to have locked in place. All around her, she sees cadets rushing towards the locked door, leading back to the station before collapsing, sinking to the floor where they stand or falling unconscious on their feet. Something awful is clearly happening. Minori desperately tries to remain standing despite her shaking legs and drowsiness, but she ends up on her knees before she knows it. It can't be an accident that all of the cadets' backpacks are malfunctioning at once. Is this how new cadets are greeted here, or are the CC behind this? She soon falls to her hands and knees. Doesn't take long before she can no longer resist, sinking to the deployment port's floor. The moment her helmet hits the floor, her consciousness fades to black. When she comes to, a red-tinged void fills her field of vision. A disturbing rhythm, like the beating of drums, fills her ears. The sound is all she can hear. Suppressing her rising panic with every fiber of her being, she examines her surroundings. Minori's in outer space, a void with no set concept of direction. She's floating with nothing to hold on to. That sound roaring in her ears is her own pulse. She's not alone out here. Other figures collide and the orange spacesuits float all around her, floating through space like drops of water. What's going on? She scours her memories from before. She had been checking her spacesuit in the deployment port, but the moment she opened her air valve, she blacked out. She can see the thrusters and the cadets' backpacks flaring to life all around her. Soon enough, she too feels a sudden push from behind her back. G-forces push against her as she begins to accelerate. The moment she sees what she's flying towards, Minori's breath catches in her throat. The CC! Paradise Lost! It has the appearance of a nightmarish, surrealist painting combining equal parts beauty and grotesqueness. The place suspected to be the CC stronghold lays right before her eyes. How could she not have seen it earlier? No, she did notice it. Some unconscious part of her simply refused to acknowledge its presence. Minori and the rest of the cadets are all falling toward that nightmarish place. No, not falling. Their suit's thrusters are rolling at full power. They're not falling. They're being intentionally driven there. Minori feverishly tries to open her spacesuit's controls, trying to make something, anything happen. Nothing she does can prevent her fall. Her thrusters refuse to deactivate. The other cadets also seem to realize what's happening. She sees them fiddling with her controls as well, but their efforts are just as futile. If she can't stop her fall, at least she can report what is happening. Base, come in. This is Cadet Minori Izuka. I'm currently plummeting towards Paradise Lost. Come in. Base, come in. She tries to speak calmly and clearly, but her voice comes out high-pitched and strained. She doubts the suit even has a communication device, but she can't bring herself to think about that while panicking like this. She continues thrashing around, trying to point her boosters away to change her trajectory, but the thrusters on her back ceaselessly spew fire, adding to her velocity. She plummets straight down towards that place. The end creeps ever closer. She can see it clearly now. What she first thought of was a field of colorful flowers turns out to be an amalgamation of ceaselessly undulating tendrils and indescribable fleshy organs. Perhaps noticing the falling cadets, the translucent tentacles gleaming with moisture expectantly raise their tips up towards them. The full official name of the CC is the Cosmic Snindarians due to their appearance. They look like sea anemones or starfish from outer space. Minori breaks into a cold sweat as she feels her skin crawling in disgust. The slick inner lining of her spacesuit unpleasantly clings to her body. It's a vexing, gross sensation. That place draws closer still. A forest, no, an ocean of tentacles approaches. It undulates as if to greet her with countless slimy, gleaming tips that turn towards her. She watches the first of the cadets plunge into the sea of tentacles. She is instantly swallowed up, seemingly consumed in a moment. Another falls in, another, and another. She can now see how the spacesuits are being torn from their bodies. Behind their helmets' visors, their eyes are wide with terror. Before long, they sink completely out of sight. Minori spreads her limbs to increase her surface area. Perhaps this way she won't sink as quickly. As pointless as her struggling might seem, she still refuses to simply give up. All she can do is resist the grip of despair however possible. She knows that the moment she stops resisting will be the moment she'll become paralyzed by terror. As terrible as her situation seems at first, there are worse fates for her to meet out here in space. The radiation let out by the red giant Purgatorio isn't so much light as it is incandescent heat. If she had been pulled toward the star instead, she would have been mercilessly burnt to a crisp. She tenses her widened limbs, bracing for impact. Tentacles reach higher from the surface of that sea, that grotesque prairie. They coil around her legs and drag her into its surface. It feels as if she's fallen into a soft, wet quagmire. Through her visor, she watches tentacles as thick as her arm or even her entire torso swoop in to envelop her. Minori clasps her hands against her encased wand where it sits underneath her spacesuit. She thinks of Lisette, of the shining hope that swooped in during her darkest hour. The thought fills her with courage. A hissing sound fills her ears as the sleek, synthetic fiber of the suit suddenly presses itself tight against her skin. The vacuum of space has sucked out all the air between her body and the spacesuit. Did the suit tear somewhere? She doesn't even have time to panic about suffocating before countless tentacles swarm her, pinning her in place. Minori tries to banish the despair darkening her heart. Ignoring the rational part of her mind and insists that resistance is futile, she tries to pull her limbs away from the tentacles binding her in place. Stay away! Stay away from me, you disgusting! I'm not gonna lose to you! Anger fills her. The CC are the hated enemies that mercilessly destroyed her home. But Minori is different now. She's a soldier, trained to fight back against them. But maybe this thought is just an indulgent refuge from the terror of death. Her resistance is clearly in vain, little more than the pointless struggle of a victim denying its fate. The CC's tentacles have covered her in some mucus-like fluid. Soft and pliant, they are immune to the clenching of her fists. Attempting to grab or kick them away is useless. The strength they possess is on an entirely different level than hers. No matter how hard she trains, a young girl like her, no, any human, no matter how strong, has no hope of resisting the fierce onslaught of those tentacles. They crawl all over her, writhing over her arms, legs, and belly as if lapping her up. Several tentacles coil around her until her entire body is covered by their flesh. Her legs are already spread, but the tentacles pull them further and further upward, further apart and upwards, lifting them up while rotating her onto her back. Her joints ache at being bent in unnatural ways, tormenting her with pain. Let go of me! Minori remains defiant, screaming into her helmet so hard it feels as though she'll cough up blood, yet her shouts are only swallowed up by the void. Had these disgusting CC intended to tear Minori Izuka to shreds, they would have already ripped her apart limb from limb by now. She would have coughed her blood and viscera out into this crimson void, her life flickering out. All it would take would be just tightening their grip a little more, bending her arms and legs just a little further into these unnatural angles, and they rip her to pieces, separated at her joints. But for better or worse, they show no signs of doing that. The tentacles simply wriggle, squirming over the surface of her spacesuit. Her hair stands on end. It feels like thousands of caterpillars are crawling all over her. She can somehow feel the soft, lukewarm tentacles through the thin, durable, synthetic fiber of her suit. The illumination provided by her helmet lets her watch the tentacles swarm over her visor. God, no, don't touch me there, Not the vacuum of space has infiltrated her spacesuit. The sturdy synthetic fiber clings so tightly to her that her naked body beneath it is clearly visible. Her nipples erect with fear and tension. The modest mound of her crotch, the cleft in its center, and its small bud, the small bud at its peak. All these are clearly visible through the fabric. The only thing separating Minori from the tentacles is that single layer of thin synthetic fiber. The tentacles grope every nook and cranny of Minori's body, persistently exploring her curves wherever they protrude outward. The movements are oddly gentle, which only serves to make them feel all the more repulsive. The tentacles start to focus on the tallest peaks and deepest valleys. The slit in her crotch, the crack of her buttocks, her navel, her erect nipples, and her armpits. They wiggle over her nipples and clitoris as if licking them up, rubbing vigorously against her vaginal cleft as if trying to make their way inside. The slimy sensations make Minori writhe. No, this is gross. Stop it. Stop. Yeah, no. If Minori were more familiar with masturbation, perhaps she might find some of this pleasant. No, these aliens would still be disgusting either way. As it stands, Minori has spent her life pursuing the example Izette had set. To do so, Minori followed a serious, austere lifestyle. The idea of indulging in sexual affairs is outright disgusting to her. She spots something unusual from the corner of her eye. A pale arm dripping with mucus bursts through the sea of tentacles. It gropes blankly at the empty void before with spasm and swallowed back down. Is this Minori's own fate, merely seconds away from being realized? She can hear the ominous sound of metal creaking around her head. Her helmet is starting to break apart. She rallies her anger, trying to fight back her fear, but the tentacles' tight hold on her renders her attempts to thrash and struggle meaningless. She breaks into a cold sweat of disgust and terror, soiling her suit even further. The fibers cling even closer to her skin, displaying the curves of her naked form even more clearly. Even her pubic hair, moist with perspiration, can be seen through the fabric at this point. The scent of her own sweat permeates her helmet. The tentacles grope her body, filling her ears with the wet sounds of the suit sliding against her limbs. Yeah, no, stop it! Minori can't help but scream. The tentacles seem to be curious about whatever lies beyond the entrance of her crotch. Their efforts stretch the fabric as they wiggle against it, trying to force their way in. Soaked with sweat and bodily fluids, the synthetic fiber painfully chafes against her vaginal lips. Shame and humiliation soak through her as she is helplessly toyed with by her most hated enemies. Minori holds back her urge to burst into tears, only for a wave of even stronger disgust to wash over her. The tentacles sliding along the crack of her buttocks have discovered the depression hidden within. A dozen tentacles are scrambling to enter her rectum. No, don't go there. Stop it. Countless tentacles assault both her orifices. They even fill the depressions of her navel and armpits. They grope every hole they discover as if attempting to bury deep into her body. The slimy sounds of the fabric rubbing against her skin and the unnatural sound of the inside of her spacesuit chafing against her wet pubic hair fill her hearing. If only she could plug her ears. Still, among the cadets, Minori Izuka could consider herself lucky. The tentacles' assaults caused many of the girls' limbs to snap. Even just around Minori, a few girls have already been twisted into shapes the human body is never intended to make. The tentacles pressing against Minori's cleft stretch the fabric as they gradually push deeper inside. Their rubbing soon causes pain to shoot through her vulnerable petals. The tips of the tentacles stretching the fabric beneath them finally penetrate her contracted rectum. Yeah, the sensation fills her mind with crashing waves of terror and pain. She never even got a chance to fight before being so humiliatingly violated. She bravely fights back tears, but no matter how long she waits for her perseverance to be rewarded, respite never comes. The fabric finally reaches its limit. The moment the screech of it ripping reverberates through her body and reaches her eardrums, the tentacles flood into the breach and force their way into her genitals. Like, it hurts, they're going in, I'm getting raped by aliens, this can't be real, no, stop. As those tentacles penetrate her suit and vagina, countless others slither between the fabric and her skin, tearing the spacesuit from inside out. The direct exposure of her skin to the vacuum of space causes all the sweat to boil away in a flash. The biting chill shocks her flesh, causing pain to shoot through her body, but the tentacles' mucus soon seals away from the vacuum, dulling the cold to a numbing sensation. Though her skin is no longer exposed to vacuum, her only remaining clothes are her helmet and the backpack connected to it. Tentacles invade her vagina one by one, violating her inner folds as they push deeper in. The moment they reach her hymen, they tear it apart with ease. Mitsume's face flushes in her mind for a second, but that image is soon swept away by a torrent of pain. The tentacles fill Minori's genitals to the brim, swallowing her body from the inside as they finally breach her very cervix and invade her uterus. A tube-like protrusion pushes against her from the inside. What little of her skin that is still visible under the tentacles shines with mucus, granting it a lurid, alluring gleam that dances and ripples as her limbs spasm. Her belly bulges so dramatically that her uterus is clearly visible under her skin. At this point, all seems lost for Minori Izuka. The insides of her new body are being invaded and toyed with by aliens. Even if she were to somehow wrestle herself free of their embrace, all that awaits her is vacuum. Stranded in a sector of space bombarded by the radiation from a red giant, she has no hope of survival. At this point, several cadets have already chosen to pull their helmets off, favoring death over violation. Minori hasn't done so, though, not because she can't, but because the thought simply never occurs to her. 9 years ago on Mars, when she was at death's door for lack of oxygen, Lizette showed up to save her. Lizette would never give up hope. Despite how hard the tentacles pull at her, they haven't yet yanked her encased wand away. With it, Lizette's pendant. Within it is Lizette's pendant, the symbol of Minori's hope. However, the brutality of her situation is too ruthless to let her cling to that sliver of hope. Her howls echo inside her cracking helmet. The unbearable pain causes her spine to arch violently. The tentacles coil around her, locking her into that strained position. She can feel the tentacles inside her swelling up even further. The pressure against her intestines from the inside causes her to vomit violently. Bile splashes onto the inside of her visor, yet her agony is far from over. The swollen tentacles merge together, forming thick tube-like organs. They start pulsating as if preparing for something. Are they trying to lay eggs inside her? That would make them ovipositors. Ovipositors, rather. Something big, even larger than the tentacles, is entering Minori's body. They're purple blobs covered in yellow dots, thick-shelled eggs. Many of them are so large that they stretch the walls of the tubes. They quiver while being pushed through the transparent vines. They advance a little, then stop. Advance again, then stop. Their entry fills Minori's body with pain beyond description. Minori finally begins begging for mercy, her eyes rolling back into her skull from the pain. Saliva drips freely from her mouth as she writhes and weeps. Even her emotional fortitude has long since been overwhelmed by the severity of her agony. The purple lumps continue gradually pushing their way through the ovipositors. Their passage through her vagina causes her walls to squeak with friction, while her swollen stomach burns with pain. Her skin is stretched so thin the details of her muscles and arteries beneath become exposed. The entrance to her vagina is a gruesome sight. Her labia have been stretched to their limit, while her prepuce is pulled back. Her clitoris is swollen, though she feels no pleasure. She always thought her hips were awkwardly large compared to the rest of her frame, but the ovipositor thrusting into her dwarfs are all the same. It feels as if her pelvis might snap at any second. Yet, even in her wretched state, Minori Iizuka remains one of the lucky cadets. If she were the slightest bit fatter, if her body were the slightest bit more fragile, her genitals would have burst at the seams. Even if the rest of her body remained intact, she would die from hemorrhage or shock. For all her squirming and spasming while suffering such terrible pain, her body just barely holds together. Although the material in the spacesuits is somewhat thinner at the joints, she's still lucky that the tentacles ripped the suit into her crotch first. If the first part of her body became exposed to the tentacles had been her butt... Okay, if the first part of her body to become exposed to the tentacles had been her buttocks or navel, the tentacles would have torn straight through her flesh to reach her insides. Even if she survived those initial wounds, the girth of the ovipositors would surely finish her off. They would have torn her body apart. Minori has no way of knowing, but at this point, countless other cadets have already died. Some from massive blood loss, others from the shock of their wounds. But this is where her luck runs dry. Her helmet, which had been cracking little by little, shatters into pieces. The tentacles finish ripping away her backpack as well. Minori's naked form is laid bare to the void of space. For a moment, the exposure to the vacuum fills her face with pain and cold, but the mucus secreted by the tentacles coats her face within moments. Ah, thank God I'm not covered in vomit anymore. That errant thought crosses Minori's mind in an attempt to find refuge from her agony. Pain soon overwhelms her all the same. Without her backpack to supply her with air, she won't survive for long. The inevitability of death by suffocation creeps towards her. As she writhes in agony and pain, the purple lumps finally reach her wound, forcing it to swell up. She can hear ominous rumbling coming from her belly. She expends all the air remaining in her lungs into a howl of agony, but it only blows a stream of bubbles into the mucus coating her face that soon disappears. She tries to stifle her screams, clinging to even the slightest chance of survival, but they blast from her lungs despite her wishes. Mucus flows into her open mouth, soaking into her insides from above as well as below. Her degrading violation continues. Minori's stomach heats up in a way she's never felt before, the ovipositors filling her vagina as it burns with heat. What? The ovipositor is filling her vagina as it burns with heat and oozes with feminine juices. The fire reaches the pit of her stomach. Even as she suffocates from both the lack of oxygen and the pressure of her terror, Minori experiences something she never thought she'd ever feel. A pitiful climax. Because she's never had one before, she fails to recognize it for what it is. Still, it allows her to forget her pain and agony for a moment. Her slender limbs spasm as if she just breathed her last. The ovipositors slowly slither out of her. The moment the massive tube vacates her body, it splits into separate tentacles again. They leave the ghastly remains of her bleeding genitals in their wake. Her once unblemished flesh is now soaked in blood, her vagina gaping wide. Her slit remains stretched apart, leaving her blood-stained, swollen folds clearly on display. Even now, her clitoris remains swollen and erect from the afterglow of her climax. Her nipples stand hard and erect. Slightly above her mons, there is now a swollen bump beneath the dense bush of her pubic hair. The alien eggs that were forced into her vagina tremble within her. Having accomplished their objective of filling her with their eggs, the tentacles release a now defiled and soiled soldier to her fate. At this point, she is in no condition to move. The mucus covering her body continues to insulate her from the harshness of space, but at this rate, she will ultimately suffocate to death. Between the sweet afterglow of her pathetic climax, her pulsive weight of alien lives incubating within her and the pain of suffocation, two words float in her mind. No more. Tears well in her eyes, melting through the mucus. As obstinate as Minori is, she can no longer stave off despair. Every inch of her being has been toyed with and corrupted by those tentacles, as deep as the very core of her being. Now she will die, tattered, beaten, and covered in mucus. Her disgrace won't end there. Her corpse will either be digested or torn apart. She should have chosen to take off her helmet and suffocate. She wants to bite her tongue, but she's in so much pain she can't even close her jaw. The last bit of air in her lungs wistfully leaks out into the vacuum. Ah, I'm gonna die. An illusory voice reaches her ears. Recall your special warfare training. Recall your special warfare training. A strange voice speaks directly into her mind. She's heard those words before. She's heard them day after day after day after day during the special warfare training simulations. Why is she remembering those words now of all times? She wanted to be a special warfare trooper from the bottom of her heart. Special warfare trooper, special warfare gear, commence deployment. Next, she hears the words that were always repeated at the start of a training session. Though her consciousness is on the verge of guttering out, she still reacts to the words. Her body recalls the mental routine that was beaten into her subconscious through repeated training. Special Warfare Trooper Minori Azuka of the Special Warfare Trooper Corps. Special Warfare Gear. Commence deployment routine. Minori reaches between her breasts, grabbing her encased wand, which miraculously still remains in her possession. Inside is the pendant the heroine Lisette personally gave her. The image of a warrior fills her mind. During her training, she envisioned this time and time again. Back then, it was only a hologram from a projector. It was her form as a warrior made to wield the special warfare gear. Lisette's form invokes the image of a Valkyrie from Norse mythology. Minori's own design is consciously based on that. A classy, functional, even slightly mech-like, futuristic cobalt blue outfit. A sharp design that emphasizes her strength as a warrior. As distant from the cuteness of a classic magical girl as could be. Maybe that kind of cuteness would better suit her two roommates from earlier. Oddly enough, the kinds of outfits that might suit those two come to mind, like manifestations of dreams all girls had at some point in their youth. Lovely, maidenly, cute. Even now, as traumatized as she is, Minori feels jealous of them both. Those two. But how would such designs look on her? No, that's not what Minori Azuka wants to become. She wants to be like Lisette. Dignified, but not Adora. At that very moment, Minori's belly, or more precisely her womb and the alien tissue forcibly implanted there, pulsates and spasms. What is this? It feels warm. Light begins to blossom from her hips, filling the space around her. Is this the special warfare gear deploying? A moment after her voice raises in shock, she experiences a second surprise from the realization that she can breathe. She cannot understand the logic behind it, but it is as though the vacuum around her has disappeared. Forgetting her fear of suffocation and her shame of defilement, Minori simply marvels at the change her body is undergoing. The light spreads until it forms a sphere roughly 2 meters in diameter around her. What first seems like fog condenses into motes of light that swirl and spirals around her. Moments later, the spirals coalesce into shining ribbons that coil around her body and limbs, materializing into matter. Huh? No, why? This is my special gear? No, this is all wrong. I didn't want something embarrassing like this. The gear adorning Minori's body is very much in line with a stereotypical magical girl's costume. It has a warm color scheme, one primarily based around pink. The skirt is short and fluttery, with adorable decorations and ribbons covering every inch of it. The outfit is overwhelmingly delicate and feminine, with even her hair brought up into twin tails. She never once imagined this kind of outfit during training. It doesn't fit her in the slightest. No way! Why? Minori is awfully confused, even dumbfounded. Any who have successfully deployed their special warfare gear escape. Hearing noises all around her, Minori looks up. Her comrades, who have also managed to successfully transform, she became a maid. She rides on a... Okay. It's kind of cool, little Valkyrie thing there. Oh, and I like this one. That's cool, kind of a... Oh, I'm trying to think. She's like a hostess or something at a little bit of a ninja thing going on, too. Kind of reminds me of Ada Wong, that outfit. Her comrades have also managed to successfully transform and are similarly floating... Blech. Let's do that again. Her comrades, who have also managed to successfully transform, are similarly floating away from the surface of Paradise Lost, warily hoping to escape that cursed kingdom of tentacles and mucus. If she recalls correctly, during training, they were told to focus on a direction to fly in it. But did she really successfully transform to begin with? The gear she manifested is completely different from what she wore during training. If she truly did deploy her gear, she may as well try. Minori focuses her consciousness upward. A force suddenly jerks her body upward, causing her to begin ascending. Whoa, that was sudden. Looking down, she sees the tentacle-covered surface grow distant. Nestled within the grotesque, writhing cluster of multicolored tentacles are the shredded remains of spacesuits and broken, disembodied limbs. Several dozen people have met their end that way, and that's just counting those in her immediate field of vision. Rage towards the CC builds within Minori's heart. These cruel, sadistic aliens slaughter them defenseless victims. She will take revenge for her fallen comrades. With that resolve in her heart, she looks up again. A swarm of CC swoop in on her, and the survivors from above as if making sure to cut off their path of retreat. The newly transformed special warfare troopers are entirely in disarray. They scatter in all directions in an attempt to flee, only to be picked off one by one. Three of the flying CC easily close the distance on the fleeing special warfare troopers. They merge together to form a gigantic jaw that swallows up the first unfortunate special warfare trooper. And a blinding flash, she is consumed. Another one barely escapes the jaws, but her special warfare gear is torn asunder, sending her plummeting back down to Paradise Lost. The CC extend what looks like grotesque pistols. The members spear through another girl's feeble barrier of light, skewering her body like a wounded sheep surrounded by a pack of wolves, or perhaps more accurately, a sacrificial lamb. The special warfare trooper is offered up to the slaughter. Damn it! Anger flares up in Minori. They think they're helpless. They're attacking them because they think they're powerless. Minori catches sight of a special warfare trooper dressed like a witch. Her flight upon her broomstick is wobbly and erratic, allowing two flying CC to easily circle in on her. Clad in her special warfare gear, Minori becomes a flash of light and speeds forward. She rapidly approaches the disgusting flying creatures. Noticing Minori's approach, one turns around. Only now does she notice how the despicable creature has a penis-like protrusion extending from its body, because of course it does. She'll defeat it. She'll defeat all of them. Minori's belly pulsates and throbs with heat. A fever surges through her body together with another stranger feeling, like something is tightening inside her chest. They draw closer. The penis-like protrusions start rotating like drills as they draw closer to her. Minori recalls the movements she learned from her training. The fact that she's dressed differently now escapes her, for all her focus is on the enemy. They are the loathsome foes that destroyed her home. She will slay them. Nothing else matters. She throws her hands forward, causing swirls of red light to coil around her arms. They turn into an elongated spear. You filthy aliens! As if pushed forward by an unseen hand, Minori accelerates. The tip of her spear extends further, forming a massive lance of light. The skin of the CC, covered in warts and scabs, is swiftly reduced to cinders. Her lance of light knocks away their drill-like protrusions when they extend to pierce her. But a moment later, the protrusions bend themselves in the angles, continuing to bear down towards her. But before their attacks can reach her, her light runs the CC through. Their bluish, disgusting bodies are blown to bits. For a moment, Minori's mind can't quite catch up to what just happened. The skirmish lacks sound or sensation. It didn't even feel real. But as she gazes at the mangled remains of the CC floating around her, something wells up in her heart. I did this. It finally all clicks into place. I really did it. Looking around, Minori can see more of her fellow cadets have deployed their gear, either evading or fighting off the CC while making their escape. Her comrades are on the back foot, though. Not only did the CC have an overwhelming numerical advantage on the special warfare troopers, they also possess superior mobility and discipline. Some of her comrades have their weapons destroyed only to be devoured. Others are taken by surprise while they're rejoicing over defeating their first opponent, and even more are unceremoniously slain for being too slow. Even Minori, despite manifesting her weapon once, can't seem to manage to repeat her earlier feats. It isn't long before she's surrounded once again. Why? I pulled it off just a minute ago. Biting her lips in frustration, she focuses on flying away, trying to put as much distance between herself and Paradise Lost as possible. Just as the aliens near her once more, rays of light rain down from above. Huge swaths of the CC are wiped out in the blink of an eye. Looking up, she spots another group of special warfare troopers. They dance through space with a grace that none of her fellow cadets can match. Are these the veteran special warfare troopers? Is Lisette there too? Special Warfare Trooper Cadets, you are ordered to return to base as soon as the CC blockade disperses. I repeat, return to base at once. Do not attempt achieving anything more than you already have. Return to base at once. Snapping out of her shock, Minori accelerates, speeding toward the opening her seniors have opened and breaking through the CC blockade. Paradise Lost gradually grows smaller behind her. And so, Minori survives. The cathedral. Even though it's been less than a day since she came here, the sight of the cathedral is an incredible relief after having just cheated death. This many of them died? Minori is struck dumb as she looks around at the other special warfare trooper cadets that managed to safely return to base. When they first gathered here in their spacesuits, the cadets almost fell to the deployment port. They now occupy less than a third of it. As rough of an estimate as that is, the casualties are undeniably overwhelming. Taken by what was essentially a surprise attack, so many girls were killed, or maybe more like murdered. The gigantic airlock closes shut above them. Once the hatches are medically sealed, the sound of rushing air fills the room. A green light shines on the wall, signaling the room is pressurized. At long last, they're finally free from the menace of the vacuum of space. The special warfare trooper cadets finally have a chance to properly look at each other. The girls standing in deployment port are all dressed in colorful outfits. Some look like they walked out of an ancient legend. Others look like soldiers from science fiction, while others look like storybook witches. but most of their outfits resemble those from Japanese magical girl anime, which the heroine Lisette so adored. In other words, it's clear that many of the girls dearly admire her. This is like a story. All Minori can think is that right now, she's within a work of fiction. Their war is to protect the Earth, magical girls to fight the evil CC. She's finally the magical girl she always wanted to be. Her body shakes with giddy excitement. Her joy even dampens her anger towards the calamity she just survived. She's a magical girl. A magical girl. She really did it. She became a magical girl. The staccato of loud, hard footsteps yanks Minori from her reverie. Before they can understand what is happening, the surviving special warfare trooper cadets find themselves surrounded by armed male officers. What? What's going on? It's as if the men think the girls are dangerous. A buzzer blares through the room. It's just like how their training missions always ended. Just then, the encased wands hanging from their necks all drop down to the floor at the same time. Minori has to hold back a scream. The powerful special warfare gear protecting her body rapidly crumbles and fades away. Some of the survivors screech as the special warfare gear covering their bodies vanishes. Others hurriedly try to put their outfits back on, but without their encased wands, their efforts are in vain. Why did the special warfare gear do that? Minori reflexively covers her chest and crotch with her hands while her panicked mind scrambles to comprehend their situation. Their training from back then conditioned them to unconsciously cancel their special warfare gear. On top of that, their encased wands fell to their feet as well. They were likely designed to do so in response to the sound of cancellation buzzer. Perhaps some kind of electromagnet is keeping them stuck to the floor. Why? She can only come to one conclusion. This procedure is meant to disarm anyone who might otherwise try to mutiny in response to their treatment. So the top brass knew all this was going to happen. In an instant, surviving cadets are forced to reveal their naked bodies after having been raped by aliens mere minutes ago. Some girls are still bleeding from their crotches while others have visibly pulsating bulges between their navels where otherworldly creatures continue to writhe inside them. A few of the girls squat down, holding their groins with dumbfounded expressions on their faces. Some are bursting into laughter, having reached their mental limits after being traumatized by so many abnormal events one after another. No, why are my clothes vanishing? No, don't look at me. Minori hears a sobbing, hiccuping voice next to her. The large-breasted girl from her room tries to cover her chest as some of the male officers who look seasoned and experienced laugh at her. Minori's indignant anger, which had been numbed by her excitement earlier, flares back to life. Her former panic gives way to utter rage, filling her heart with resolve. She steps up in front of her comrade, saying, "You knew this was going to happen, didn't you? And you let this happen to us cadets without taking any measures to stop this." Cersei steps forward through the line of male officers. That's, this is all top secret, confidential information. She speaks with a feeble, apologetic tone, causing the men to sneer and ignore her. One particularly burly man shouts, waving around his rifle. "Line up over there, it's disinfecting time." Minori protests, angered by their absurd attitude. "That's not what I'm asking. If disinfection is necessary, there should be a proper facility for it." "Well, there are budget constraints, and the base doesn't have the space for this." The large male officer smirks with blatantly perverse joy, his lips stretching into an ugly grin. "This is a battlefield. Battlefields have their own special circumstances and rules. This is to give puritanical prudes like you the reality check you need. Go on, boys. Teach her a lesson." Muscular officers grab Minori's arms from both sides, locking her in place. Even so, Minori continues resisting. "True, these are the front lines, and how the special warfare gear enters the body might be confidential, but this isn't something that should be done with so little discretion." "Well, here's your fucking discretion. I'm a nice guy. I'll have you show the other newcomers how things are done around here." The large man jerks his chin. The officers restraining Minori pull her aside, intentionally thrusting her underneath the bright lights. The glare forces her to squeeze her eyes shut. Gather in the direction she's facing. There's a circle marked on the floor. Line up there, one after another. If you get lost, just follow her tiny breasts, the itsy-bitsy raisins she has for nipples, and her filthy bush. Minori is shocked. Her naked body is being held underneath a bright light. No! She cries out when she realizes she's being held up for display. She tries to shake off the men's grips, but as a woman, even a trained soldier like her can't exercise any of her self-defense skills while restrained by such muscular men. Countless gazes mercilessly bore into her. The men hungrily gaze at her like she's little more than an animal in a zoo. The pressure of their appraising eyes on her face, breasts, and crotch is humiliating, but the reactions of the other girls, with some turning away and others looking on with pity, sting too. She's being watched. She wants to at least cover her chest with her arms, but the men are holding her limbs so tightly she feels as though her bones are creaking. Minori has dedicated her life to falling in Lisette's footsteps. She casts aside all else, prepared to suffer through anything to accomplish that goal. Meeting Mitsumi made her aware of the opposite sex, but that desire to be attractive only made her conscious of every flaw her body possessed. That was why she could never bring herself to embrace him. And now, she and her inferiority complex are being exposed in a clear act of sexual humiliation. She becomes hyper-conscious of every single ugly trait her body possesses. Her skin drips with a combination of sweat and alien fluids. Her shoulders, slender and lacking any musculature, are unsightly. Her breasts, though small, still manage to sag. Even her stiff nipples are darker in color than she would like. She can claim to be thin thanks to her metabolism, but that only causes her ribs to stick out and her waist to lack any curves. Her navel is warped due to her stout, hardy hip bones that are unsuited for her short stature. Despite her youthful figure, she's mature in one particular place. A thick layer of pubic hair covers her slit. Just below that, the thin skin of her inner thighs is covered with rivulets of virginal blood. That blood is proof that she was violated by aliens and is now carrying their seed within her womb. Her body was never much to look at, but now it's been so disgraced, she feels even more wretched about it than before. Her shame is so intense that it overwhelms her anger at being treated with such little dignity. The display of the terrible punishment inflicted on Minori causes many of the cadets to become docile. They peek at her as if staring at something terrifying, falling into line with frightful steps. The Asian officer holding Minori in place whispers to her while baring his set of yellow teeth. Hey, stand still, little Miss Scapegoat. Perform your first duty on this base well. The other officer holding her, a black one, smirks at her. You make for a good example, baby. The women are all like obedient sheep. The women are all like obedient sheep being herded by his hounds. Minori feels cold metal objects press into her breasts and buttocks. However, this only serves to rekindle her righteous anger. Thrusting guns against a defenseless target? You're a bunch of cowards. The yellow-toothed officer snickers. Well, see, all we have to do is decide you're severely contaminated and you'll be one gunshot away from the afterlife. Still, talk about a pair of flimsy fun bags. Thrusting the gun's muzzle hard enough to make it sink into her skin, he persistently pokes at her nipple, which has gone numb from the cold. She feels another muzzle press against her backside. Hehe, you want me to shove it up the ass, pull the trigger, and shoot inside you until you're blown to bits? But hey, if a bullet goes up your ass and into your mouth, maybe you'll pipe down. Cersei eyes Minori with a pitying expression. As Minori bites her lips to bear the indignity, most of the female officers quietly do as they're told. The burly officer, the first shout at Minori, steps forward, looking her up and down with a crooked smile on his lips. Your body isn't good enough to even bother hiding, but I'll put it to good use. You should thank me for picking you, yellow bitch. Whoa. If you're feeling grateful at all, get on your knees and suck my cock. He laughs with vulgar scorn. Minori simply gives him a reproachful glare. I'll be looking forward to seeing how long you can keep up that righteous attitude. Now get in line, you undeveloped excuse for a chick. The officers holding out Minori's arms let go of her. She refuses to give in just yet, though. If she submits to this outrageous treatment now, she can only imagine how the rest of them will be treated going forward. Minori straightens her back and glares up at the officer who's far taller than she is. Your orders are in violation of your authority as officers established by military protocol. Your racist and sexist remarks are in defiance of military discipline. I demand fair treatment. To begin with, the pre-mission briefing didn't... The two officers behind her push her down to the floor. With Minori down on all fours, the officer she confronted says, "How long are you going to show us your filthy little asshole, your filthy yellow asshole? I told you to go over there and line up with the rest. Or what, are you trying to seduce me here, you fucking slut?" When Minori looks up, she finds herself staring down the muzzle of two guns. "You bitches have been in close contact with the aliens. You have to be disinfected. Anyone who doesn't line up will be deemed severely contaminated and gunned down where they stand." Someone grabs onto Minori's arm, but the hand isn't rough like that of a man's. She hears another girl whisper into her ear, "Cut it out with that righteous act of yours." Minori looks up, fully intent on retorting, only to see the Russian cadet from her room. The soft coolness of the girl's hand extinguishes Minori's fervor. Although indignation still smolders in her heart, she lets the Russian girl lead her back into line. The armed soldiers order the girls to line up. They're brought to an area surrounded by a low barrier. There are 10 circular yellow marks scattered on the floor. The girls take the positions indicated in groups of 10, but only 5 of the circles are ultimately filled. All of the girls are naked as Minori and are prohibited from hiding their bodies. Many of the girls are either holding back tears or failing to do so. Others seem detached, biting their lips in an attempt to tolerate their situation. Only a few seem entirely indifferent. The colors and lengths of their hair differ, as do the colors of their skin, their heights, the sizes of their breasts, the lengths of their legs, and the patterns of their pubic hair. Even the ways their genitals look, they all differ from one another. It's clear which of them came from the officer's academy. Their limbs are toned and lack any needless flab. It only takes a glance to know that they must be trained soldiers. Yet even they are treated exactly the same as the other cadets. The evidence of the aliens' violation of their bodies is still clearly visible. Without any pity or gratitude, the girls are herded together like cattle being taken to market. Minori stands next to her Russian roommate. Some of the girls turn to look at Minori. They give her waves, thumbs up, or nods. They clearly feel sympathy for her. She's comforted by the thought that her actions weren't entirely in vain. The girl in front of her turns around. It's the big-breasted girl who tried to hide herself earlier. Minori finally recognizes her as her other roommate. "Thanks for earlier." After whispering that to Minori, she turns around again. "Everyone, good job on your safe return. You've done well to survive. We will now..." "Line up, everyone. All cadets, close your eyes. Begin disinfection." A shrill buzzer blares out. Men wearing white coats and carrying large tanks on their backs step forward from between the armed soldiers, pointing hoses at the girls. With no further warning, they begin spraying immediately. A medical stench envelops the girls. A thick mist of disinfectant washes over them. Their bodies are soaked with a fluid which drips down the floor and forms large puddles. The puddles expand as seconds pass, joining together until they coat the entire floor. Open your eyes, but keep your heads down. The disinfectant will make your eyes sting like hell, so keep your heads down like cattle at the market. Minori tries to keep her head up in spite of his orders, but the burning pain in her eyes forces her to squint and look down again. Her eyes are greeted by a strange sight. The puddle of disinfectant between them has formed a large reflective surface like a mirror. From this angle, it looks as though the girls' naked bodies are hanging upside down. It almost looks as though they're strange creatures that have their genitals where their heads should be. Minori can't look away from her twisted, monstrous form. "We'll now perform individual inspections. Gotta check you didn't turn into monsters, haha. I wonder how many of you got morphed into aliens." Cersei speaks up, as if to elaborate on his words. "The organs the CC implanted in you should have stabilized and fixed themselves into place. It's extremely unlikely any of you will become a CC. This will only be slightly different from a normal physical inspection." "I'll call your names. When you hear your name, head into the inspection room. Abigail Clark." The massive deployment port feels as though it must lack proper air conditioning, for the air is terribly cold. It seems like forever until Cersei calls for Minori. But by the time Minori finally hears her name, her body is chilled to the bone. Minori shuffles forward with heavy steps. With her warmth sapped away and fatigue setting in, she could hardly bring herself to care about the men's smirks and gazes they leered at her naked body. After passing through a pair of thick doors, she is once again doused with disinfectant from above. For a few seconds, she simply stares at her miserable, drenched form from reflected in the inner door's metal surface. Wet and shivering, she enters the inspection room. There, warmer air embraces her moist skin. Minori is relieved to finally feel some warmth, but she can faintly sense a sort of acrid scent in the air. What is this scent? It feels like she has smelled it before. 5 men gathered around a large platform wide enough to support 2 people lying side by side stop working as they notice Minori. Minori reflexively covers up her privates with her hands, but the men, clad in lab coats, soon resume their work indifferently. It seems they're putting something away. One of them is wiping the floor with a mop. Apparently some liquid spilled there earlier. Another man hurriedly rises from his chair, peering into the portable terminal as he approaches. He's a middle-aged man, seemingly of Indian descent. His white lab coat contrasts his dark skin. Minori Iizuka from Mars Eastern Canal Base, that you, yes? Or that's you, yes? The gaze from behind his glasses doesn't feel the slightest bit sexual. Feeling a little relief, Minori nods. I'm Aravin Brakashi. Okay. It might be hard to believe, given the ruffians I have the pleasure of working with, but I've earned my degrees from Harvard and Cambridge. Of course, origin and education don't necessarily mean much. Still, I'm in charge of maintaining the health of the cathedral's personnel. Physical health, that is. I don't deal in mental health. A pleasure to meet you. Minori gets the feeling that she's finally met the first reasonable person stationed here. Get on top of that platform, please. The platform stands at about the level of her stomach. A circular section of the ceiling drops down lower above it. Dangling from it is a circular device surrounded by the machines. There are no stools or stairways around the platform. To get up, she will have to climb onto the platform, one leg after the other. It's a simple, natural set of movements. However, Minori hesitates to do so. You scored high marks while at the Officer's Academy, right? It's clear from how toned your muscles are. You shouldn't have any problems climbing up. The problem is that if she lifts her legs to climb up, her crotch would be on full display. A shameful reminder of the horrible treatment she just endured weakens her will. You don't need to feel reserved. We're used to seeing women's genitals. I've been working in the cathedral since it was established. I've already seen 20 women just today. He speaks with a perfectly serious and level tone of a professional doctor, but somehow that only makes her more self-conscious. That said, my aides are all young men. They've been holding back erections for some time now. They won't pounce on you, though, so there's no need to worry about that. Those words only make her freeze up for longer at first, but she realizes that if she dawdles here, the remaining cadets will be forced to stay outside in the cold for even longer. After a moment's hesitation, she turns her back to the platform and places a seat on its edge, leaving her hands covering her privates. What happens now? Despite her attempts to hide herself, she knows this is a medical inspection. He'll likely be examining her body closely anyway. That thought only makes her want to curl up and hide even more of herself. Yes, it's a pretty understandable reaction. Even men react this way to having to stand nude. But just the same, your shame is utterly pointless. The aides busy themselves around her, swiftly clasping bands around her wrists and ankles. A moment later, a force yanks her arms up and away from her body. No! The bands around her wrists connect to the wires extending from the ceiling. Similarly, the bands around her ankles are connected to wires extending from the floor. The result is that she has been forced to stand with her limbs spread apart. With her body completely laid bare like this, she's entirely exposed to the eyes of the men around her. The men below her can easily see her anus and vagina with an upward glance. Like I said, utterly pointless. Commence measurement. The aides nod at the doctor's words and begin bustling around the platform as they work. Part of the platform's floor opens right beneath Minori's crotch. A cylindrical device gradually rises out of it. Well, what is this thing? What's it supposed to inspect? I don't know, folks. But we're gonna find out later on Grim Sentai Corner. Not gonna do 2 8 scenes. It's actually pretty late anyway. But hey, I showed you this much. And if you like what you see, let me know with a like, comment, whatever. And we'll do more of Dead and Aegis. And this is the Grim Lord, and I... I'm out of here. Later.